It's Wrecking Ball Radio.
Shut up and entertain me.
There's no rules. There's no rules.
Holy sh! It's amazing.
I see her sarcasm and nastiness grow.
This is Davin's Den.
Good evening, everybody. You are listening to Davin's Den. Yes, Davin's Den, the show that is better than a Natty Light ice pop. You can join the chat room. Go Den Pen. Go to DavinComedy.com. Click live, broadcast, or listen live, or broadcast live, whatever the hell it says. And you can watch us on Facebook Live on the Davin's Den page. Hopefully the audio sounds all right there tonight, as none of us are together, but who knows. Audio is better on Davin Comedy always. Anyway, I am your host, Davin Rosenblatt. I am joined by Pip Helix. Hello, Pip.
Hi, everybody.
And special guest, we haven't seen him in a long time, but we're happy to see him, our muscular and funny friend, Kevin Israel. Hello, Kevin. We're happy to have you back. It's been quite some time. Was the last time we had Kevin here when we were we got a whole bunch of politicians and we had to pick sides like for like our ultimate political? Was that the last time?
Wow.
So Kevin has not really been here since the Trump era started and ended. That is a damn crime. That is a damn crime.
Fill in for Joe while he's not able to be on the show this week, and my first choice was you.
This
so
is true.
Thank you for joining
us.
This is true. I always ask my when one of our co-hosts, and Joe will be here next week. Joe will be here next week. I don't see why he wouldn't be. Well, when one of them is absent, I always ask the other co-host if there is anybody they would like to have, maybe somebody they know that I don't know, or one of the people that we've had before. You know, I let them make the suggestion, and then we go from there. If they don't make any suggestions, I mean, it's true. I'm sure, Kevin, you knew this when you guys were doing your podcast. People always want to be on these things. Like, I get asked all the time to, like, do it, but there's three of us and there's not that much room for pause for like to get a word in edgewise, and so unless somebody's got something to promote or I'm going to do an interview, just to have a fourth comic, I think it makes it more mayhem. So that's why I haven't. But you know, you always bring something. Always like what you bring to the show, Mr. Israel. Always nice to.
Well, thank you. I love being here. I adore you guys, and it's nice to be back. Virtually.
Yes. So on the show, a judge says a girl is too immature to decide if she should have an abortion. That's going to be a fun topic. In School of Fools, a school gets sued for cotton picking experience. That's going to be a fun topic. Nazi news, a police chief displays a Nazi sign and gets $1.5 million for his troubles. And New York whipped cream is now a controlled substance. Drunks in the news, and beer-flavored dessert is a thing now. And I know Kevin has apparently a strong opinion about IPA, so maybe we'll get into that a little bit too. Jeez, he's passionate about so many important issues like the rest of us.
All the news is fit to print.
Exactly. And we'll play Bitter on Twitter, which we haven't done in a long time. And then I guess next week we will do some scamming stuff. So, Kevin, a lot has changed in your world since I've seen you. I've worked with you, but we haven't had you on here. So now you are a father. Mazel tov.
I am. I'm a dad. Had a little baby boy back in December. He's 8.5 months old now, and my life is irrevocably changed. And it's been wonderful and horrifying and
all right,
exhausting and all this stuff.
What's the best part that has changed for you?
I mean, I adore him. Like I think he's the cutest thing in the world. He smiles constantly. He makes me laugh. He laughs at me. That's probably the best thing. He thinks I'm hysterical.
Pip, write this down. Pip, write this down. Kevin loves his son because he's the best audience member he's ever had. Yeah, right? That's
if I could have 5,000 or 6,000 more of him, I wouldn't have to do this show.
If you could have 5,000 or 6,000 more of him, Ashley's uterus might go on strike. She loves you, but I don't think she loves 5,000 or 6,000 more babies.
No, definitely not.
So he's a joyous kid. He's a joyous kid. He's a happy kid. You know, he makes you laugh. He makes you smile. All right.
Yeah, it's amazing. He's a really easygoing. Everybody that meets him is like, you won the baby lottery. Like he sleeps, he eats, he doesn't fuss. He's
all right.
For a 46-year-old guy who got his life started a little too late, he's the easiest baby I could have been handed, so I can't complain.
Now, I believe this all about your son. I do. I've never met him, but I believe this all about your son. But let's be real. Nobody's ever, like, met a baby for the first time and go, listen, I got to tell you, as far as babies goes, this one sucks.
Really?
I mean, no, listen, I don't know what the return policy is. Do we have orphanages? But this kid's a dud. Nobody does that. I mean, so I believe every... What?
You're right. Yeah. I have had people call me up after the fact and be like, I got to tell you, we were talking about it on the way home, and that is the best behaved kid I've ever seen.
Wow.
Like, yeah, I mean, and for me, I'm not like some people like love babies and they, you know, they always interact with babies. I was never, I just never knew what to do with a baby. It never really interests me. So this isn't my first real baby experience. So I'm just a happy idiot going along, assuming this is just how all babies are. But apparently some are assholes.
Well, the fact that, like, people are, like, calling you up to say after they leave the baby, that was amazing. Because most of the time, we humor you with newborns. Not you, everybody with newborns. As was done, I'm sure, to me and my family. We humor, we polite, we coochie-coochie-coo, so cute, even when the baby's hideous. You know, we do all that stuff. But to make a phone call on the ride home and say, listen, not for nothing. That baby is tremendous. Fairly unusual.
Yeah, I'll
take it. So, all right. So, this baby's amazing. What's the worst part about this whole thing?
I think just a change in life. Like, it's just as a comic, being able to be free to do whatever you want. You know, we'll get calls last minute. Say, hey, can you come over here tonight? You know, it's an hour and a 15-minute drive, and you're, oh yeah, sure. And getting adjusted to not saying yeah to everything is difficult because I had a few slips where I'd call Ashley and I'd be like, hey, I got a show, and she'd be like, oh, well, you know, the baby, and I'd be like, ah, shit, yeah, sorry. So just adjusting to the fact that there's somebody more important than me in my life is an adjustment.
Well, it's not even that
love me.
It's not even necessarily that you have plans to do something with the baby. And actually, it's the fact that maybe Ashley's been with the baby for a number of hours and she kind of needs a break. And you not being there is not giving her the break that she needs. Is that part of it too?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. See, I mean, look, I will sing Ashley's praises till my dying breath. She has been an amazing mom. Women apparently it just kicks in and you just go into turbo mode, and she does everything. I'm just a lackey. I just take orders. I try to do them to the best of my ability. And I'm sure I fail a lot, but she you know, adores the kid, and she hasn't complained much at all. So, but typically the complaints are something about me being like, hey, I have to do a 3-hour radio show tonight.
Oh, well, listen, if you got to bail out because something major's going on, that's fine.
No, luckily he goes to bed in the next 20 minutes.
Oh, okay. Like, I remember, first of all, when my daughter was born, it's like going on almost 16 years now. First of all, I was in Ha Comedy Club, which was in Times Square. I was living here, so I was about an hour plus away. But I'd be going in. So you're doing like a bunch of spots a night. So there's opportunities to do new material. And my new material was very dark. Like it was an adjustment. I was not the hat. Now it's like 8 plus months now for Kevin. So I don't know what he was like those first couple weeks, first couple months. But my material was very dark as far as fatherhood. I've spoken about this before. I would compare babies to puppies, and puppies were always coming out ahead.
That's the plot of the movie Boss Baby.
Oh, is it? I did not know that.
That's the entire. You just summed up the entire plot of that amazing Oscar-nominated movie.
Well, maybe they were one of the six people that saw me at various shows at Ha. And whenever the hell that was. I can't even remember when my daughter was born. All right, 16. Oh, 2006. In 2006. Yeah, that would be right. Now, I also remember pretty soon after she was born, fairly soon, I was in Ocean City, Maryland, working for the summer, which now just seems like insane. Now, I would come back on Saturday night. Like, I would drive back Saturday night because we didn't have a show on Sunday. So I would come back, and then I would go back down there early Monday. So I would spend some money. But that seems a little insane that I would do. The money was okay. But that seems like a pretty bad decision. I don't remember how old she was. I also remember... And this went on for a long time because my wife went back to the office. I came off the road. I mean, before my daughter was born, I was gone 30, 40 weeks a year, you know, touring, doing comedy. Now, back then, you actually could do it. But, like, my career changed a lot because of my daughter. Now, you've always maintained a day gig and then do the comedy when you can. Besides not being able to take the last-minute gig, has your comedy career changed much?
No, you know, I don't think the career has changed much. It almost feels like I'm getting more opportunities now, but it's probably because I have to turn some down just because of time constraints.
Mm-hmm.
But I started trying to write material, and obviously anybody who's gone through parenthood and is a comedian knows that the material just kind of writes itself. But my wife and I, and we're pretty open about this, we went through IVF, which is an insane process, but also I dealt with some male infertility issues that I had to have surgery for, which I don't need to say anything. You can imagine how horrible it was. And so I'm starting to try, and to your point, Zavin, of dark material, I'm trying to write about that without it sounding as hard, because there was a lot of funny involved, and most of it was funny. And thankfully it all worked out and we were blessed and it was, everything went right, for us, but getting into it, and I've tried, the audience immediately just, it goes from a comedy show to a TED talk, and the audience is immediately like, oh my God. And they want to like sympathize. It's like, no, I'm going to still be telling jokes. It's going to still be funny. You just got to get through this part of me preparing you for, some real life shit. So working in that material, and it's a lot of material. It's a lot to talk about. That's something I'm going to be working on over the next probably couple years, but it's given me a lot of material, but it's definitely a life changer. I mean, anybody who says it doesn't change their life is either lying or a terrible parent.
Or they abandoned their kid. I was just thinking. I was just thinking about what you said. What's interesting about stand up comedy is probably one of the few careers where you don't want empathy or sympathy in the workplace.
Right.
Yeah. So I remember doing a routine at RJ Gators. Devin knows what I'm talking about. Where I decided to change up, my fledgling stand-up routine, and I decided to talk about stuff I knew that I thought was funny, but I approached it wrong. See, my mom has schizophrenia, and my dad was a second-generation postal worker. I thought that was amusing. It was a good premise. And I started with that, and I got, aw. And I was like, oh, no. This is a deep hole I have put myself in. So I never really figured out how to start that way and get out of it.
I still contend I could write that into something where you would be famous off it. That's the type of damage that our industry is looking for. I mean, my parents did not damage me enough, apparently. So, like, I am forever, well, he's very funny, but that type of damage, I could write that funny for you. We could do something with that. Yeah, there's no, the, you know, hearing awe from an audience is one of the worst things we hear.
That was not what I wanted to happen.
Yes.
I was like, you know, I had to console the audience. It's okay. It's okay.
I get a lot of, during my shows, sometimes, yes, or right, or that's true. And I got to remember, I go, listen, I'm not looking for a rounding, rousing affirmation here, folks.
Right. Right. That's Sunday church.
And yeah.
Somebody go, preach on!
I have had that.
I'm just going to go cut to the chase and write a TED Talk.
I've had that. You know, I've talked about before where during the Bush administration, I was talking about something, and I had people shouting, I should run for president. It's like, that's like, and it was a great show. It's like, wow, that was not the reaction I was expecting. But, you know, the things that Kevin's talking about with the infertility and what you're talking about with your mother and your father, I mean, that's, I don't know if that's what the audiences want, but that's certainly what our industry wants. I think the audiences just want pretty much just make me laugh. And I don't know that every audience member is so discerning. But as far as industry go, we can't fix you, but we can make money off of you.
Well, there's no fixing this.
No, but again, if in another line of work, you know, the empathy or sympathy might lead to trying to help you deal with it, a solution. In our industry, it's like, how can we exploit this?
Are you willing to cry on stage? If you'll cry on stage, we can do something.
I don't cry.
How can I stop myself?
I don't cry on stage. I cry when I look at my calendar and I try to get work. That's when I cry.
I cry in the supermarket. It's you know, driving to work, driving home from work.
I'm just going to put this out there, and then I'll talk more about my tour and everything. But it is immensely depressing when you realize, if you're fairly good at this, and Kevin is very good at it, that for a lot of us, it doesn't really matter how good we are. It's a very weird thing that being good at your job, it really doesn't matter. It's a very
Yeah.
There's no barometer in this business. I mean, Gavin and I have talked this into the ground, and I think every comic kind of at our level where, you know, we're working regularly, people know we're good, but you're not getting that, you know, network call. I think there's a general frustration in the business. Number one, that there is no, and I don't even want to say union, because the union's been bandied about over the years, but there's just no gatekeeper to say, all right, you've been doing this for 15 years, you're good, you get to move to the next level, or I'll get you some opportunities, or, you know, you're just natural. Or, and on the reverse, there's nobody to say, hey, this isn't for you. We're thinning the herd. So the people who are actually decent at this, and that's, it sucks to say, because I remember when I started out being like, you got to cut your teeth, you got to learn, and you do. But there's also a point, and I would say it's probably at the 5-year mark, where it's fair to, you've reached the point where somebody can say you're good or not. And that's not that you're funnier. It's not necessarily funny, because funny is so subjective. And like what I, you know, I don't like all comics, but I can acknowledge that some comics are great, but they might not be for me. But it's a matter of, are you good at this? Are you good at doing it? Do audiences laugh? Are you received well? And there are some comics, and I'm sure Davin and I can make a long list, who have been doing this at least as long as us, if not longer, who aren't good, who just aren't good. And they continue to get work, or they continue to just kind of eke by. And nobody says, hey, you know what? This isn't your thing. This isn't for you. And if we could have that kind of vetting process in this business, there would be a lot more opportunities for everybody, and audiences would probably be more interested in going to see comedy, because the shows they'd be seeing would always be good.
Yeah, that's just, that just thoroughly depresses me. Okay. I can't, you know, I like to argue, as anybody who listens to this show knows. I really can't argue with anything Kevin just said. So I'm just going to get to my tour. There was various aspects of the tour, and you guys jump in, and there's a little bit of what Kevin was just talking about in there. And then there's just general zaniness and oddities that seem to accompany me in my particular show, and maybe the stuff I do or not do. I don't even know. I don't even know anymore. But if I'm going away for 2 weeks alone, which doesn't even happen anymore, usually I have somebody on tour with me or my family with me if it's on an island, not named Rhode Island. But like to be alone for 2 weeks doesn't even happen that much anymore. And more I'm getting asked, do I want to bring a feature with me? Which is nice, but I also think bookers are just getting lazy. They don't want to make an extra phone call.
Yeah.
But all right, so here we go. First of all, before I even leave, this is actually as I'm away. The various things, like, I'm at one point, I'm sitting in my car, and I'm not a religious person, I don't know if there's a God or not, but if there was a God, I feel like God just likes to give me busy work. Like, he's like, you know what, you can't be sitting here doing nothing, let me create some minor nuisances and inconveniences that you will need to solve as you venture out there, so you can't just kick back and relax. So I will present these to you. So the day before I'm driving to Florida, now my car, now since I came back from Florida, has 293,400 and something miles on it.
Oof.
It's a lot. And it's not like I'm driving a 1996. It's a 2010. It's not a young car anymore. But, you know, that's a lot of miles. And now I'm at the point where I get nervous driving the car. It's like I don't get nervous driving it locally. It still runs fine. But it's like, ugh, every time I feel like I'm pushing my luck with this thing. And I was just...
Oh, yeah, that many miles on it. Your car needs a walker.
Funny. my car needs a support animal. It's seen a lot. So the day before I go down, now about a month ago, I took my car to the mechanic. I go, look for anything that you see wrong, solve it, let's fix it. I want to be ahead of the curve. You know, I want to, and of course, I needed tires, which I talked about on the air because my alignment was off. Okay, that's not major. I can get that done. Got the tires done. So the day before, I'm leaving on a Monday at 3 p.m. I'm leaving so late because my wife had to leave town for a work thing, and this is the first time my daughter is going to be home by herself for a couple of days. So I'm trying to stay home as late as possible, and I'd like to be there by the time she wakes up. So I have the, she likes to get up when she can at the crack of 2 p.m. So I see my car is leaking something on Sunday. So now I got to go to the mechanic. I get there. They open up at 8 a.m. I got there before 8 a.m. because I got to see what's going on. Now we have my wife doesn't have her car with her because she flew. So I could have taken the new RAV4, which she tells me to take. She's very generous with it. But I don't want to beat the crap out of her car the way I've beaten it up out of my car. So I thought it was oil. Turns out it's not. It's a clamp for the radiator. So that was an easy fix. If I didn't get it fixed, I would have had a radiator that would have overheated.
That would have been a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting is, and maybe this was an omen of things to come, as I'm driving to the mechanic, and this has only happened one other time in my life that I can recall, and I do remember the other time, I'm driving to the mechanic, and a bird drives into my car. No, not like the windows down and straight. It's like, wow, I'm sitting here on the side of the road. Now would be a good time to take flight, and kills itself.
Maybe it was, just like that CFO of Bed Bath & Beyond. You know, things were going bad for him.
The bird got bad numbers? the bird had bad stock evaluations? And it's like, yeah. I can't go on? Okay.
My seed is down. I can't go on.
Fair enough. The other time was when I was, I guess, in high school. I'm driving my Camaro, and like two seagulls flew into the windshield. I got two for the price of one. But birds flying into cars is not a usual thing. Okay.
Of course, you had a Camaro.
I've had two. I had two Camaros. Shut up. We grew up at the same time. You would have had a Camaro too if you could have.
It's a Jersey thing.
It is. Jersey had the T-tops, two Camaros. So I leave my car at the mechanic. Now I'm going to see some of my wife's aunt and uncle. They're from up here. They're in Florida now. I said, is there anything I can bring to you from home? They want bagels. So I walk to the bagel store, and the bagel store is closed. Why is the bagel store closed? Because they're on vacation. Of course they are. Of course they are. So now I get my car fixed, and I got to find a different bagel store because I can't get them like ShopRite bagels or Price Chopper bagels. It has to be at least from a legitimate bagel store. If the bagels are no good, yeah. If the bagels are no good, not my fault, but at least I tried. So. Yes. So I'm like, they're going to be day-old bagels. They're like, day-old bagels from New York are better than anything Florida has to offer. All right. So now I got to go and get the bagels. So then I'm driving down, and it's about a 16-hour drive down. And I stopped twice to take, like, two-hour naps. But I'm driving through the night, and I don't know if this will ever make it to the air at a later point, but I was on Instagram. I was chatting with a scammer that wasn't annoying me. I enjoyed chatting with the scammer. So the scammer was keeping me company in the wee hours of the night.
Well, you know what? Yeah, that is. You know, he just knows how to, like, you know, multitask.
Right, and I can do this because my phone is sitting on the dashboard. My wife, like, glued some type of little nub that I can hang the ring on my phone. Now, my phone is a 2020, and the case that I have is a hard case with here, I can actually show you, has the ring attached to it. Has the ring attached, like, but then the ring snapped off on the drive down. So now, when I want, now I my Waze is on there, so I have to look down and look at Waze and everything. Why would this happen now? Because God wants to create busy work for me. So then when I'm down there, I'm going to Best Buy, I go to Verizon. Nobody has this case anymore. So I have to, like, order it on Amazon. Of course I do, while I'm away. So I deal with that. And then, I've talked about before, and Kevin's actually been in the car with me when I got my first one of these. I got a USB Walkman cassette player that I plug into the car, and I listen to the cassettes. You know, the wires are not good. It really ruins the sound, so I'm losing my patience with it, and I can't find a Bluetooth one. But it's a good way to listen to cassettes when I'm driving because I like some of the albums. Well, I left it in the in the car when I was at my wife's aunt and uncle. I came back and I posted a picture on Instagram and Facebook. It melted. The heat melted it.
Oh, yeah. That's what that was. I saw that you had some kind of audio appliance that melted. And I thought, that doesn't look good.
So if my hand is the cover, you know, that closes on it, beforehand, now it's like this. My cassette case is a claw. It's, again, stupid shit. Also,
it was demonstrating the curvature of the earth for any flat earthers or what?
Yes. Also, I have a radar detector because I go fast and I take chances. And I love my radar detector. The radar detector is attached by two suction cups that go through a bracket. You know, this is not major technology here, but on this trip, one of the suction cups that has the little nub that fits through the bracket comes apart. So now I have a radar detector hanging like this, which is no way for a radar detector to detect radar. So now I got to go to three stores to find a suction cup. I can't find the suction cup I need. So I go to Walmart and I get like a little hooky suction cup, which is fine except for like when the windshield gets to 100 degrees and then it peels off and I have to restick and everything. Again, these are not major things. It just adds up. And oh yeah. I also, my engine light went on. The last time my engine light went on was the last time I drove down to Florida about a year ago. But now I know, I'm like, all right, why did my engine light go on? Because apparently I burned through 2 quarts of oil driving that much, that fast.
Wow.
What kind of car is this?
This is a Kia Forte. This is the first year, the 2010. I actually got it in September of 2009, but this was the first year of the Kia Forte. So this
he means it's from the year one.
It is from, well, it's the, you know, listen, normally I don't like to get things the first year because there's bugs and everything. The only bug was they lied about how much gas mileage it gets. You know, I get about.
Would you say driving is no longer its forte?
Wow. Wow. No, no. I wouldn't say that. It drives fine, Mr. Israel. Is this good, though? I get like 29 miles per gallon. Is that good?
That's great.
Is it?
Yeah, that's really good.
I feel like it's not. I feel like I should be doing better.
Well, I don't know. Pick the shit out of the car. Lose some weight. But other than that,
wow!
It's really good.
Wow. Wow. I don't think my weight was any reason for a shot there. I just feel like you felt like taking a shot at my weight. That was certainly uncalled for.
You know, weight impacts the car. That's just...
Out of all
oh
the,
my God, I must be getting 2 miles per gallon. Jeez!
Don't give Kevin an opening. Don't give Kevin an opening. He's you know, he fits nicely in Joe's seat. He's a hateful human being. He fits right in.
But I say it with a smile. Doesn't that count for something?
No. When Joe says something nasty, he smiles too. It's the only time.
That's what confuses me.
He has that vacant-eyed true believer smile that looks like he might end up killing somebody.
No, he might wind up killing somebody just because he's out of patience. But
wait a minute, that's from the get go.
Yeah. All right. So these are just a little new, not major things, just nuisances. And I will tell you, on the ride home, my ride home was 20 hours. I did that straight. I did 20 hours straight.
Holy shit!
Wow.
Yeah.
So. Oh my God.
And we'll get
you
a little.
But not you. Like stop for food and stuff. You had to stop.
Yeah, I stopped for food and peeing, but there was no relaxation, stretching. It's like boom, we go. Okay. We ride. We go. When it's time to get home, it's time to get home. But all right.
Wait a minute. You stopped to pee? Don't you have the Trufker bottle? What's wrong with you?
I don't because if I had the bottle, then it would just be more weight in the car, and I know how much Kevin frowns on that.
And we don't want to ruin that gas mileage.
No,
right?
Kevin. Kevin has very issues with my bladder, so you know. All right. So here's a little bit of the tour. A lot to get to. It was a really good tour, and I met a lot of nice people. That's often the case. I like traveling because I get to meet new and interesting people, and you know, chat with them. I always enjoy that. I accomplished what I needed to accomplish, and the fact that since the end of last year, I've been trying to record a set to submit to Fallon, and I've gone through so much material, edited so much stuff, added stuff, subtracted stuff. Then you finally get the material, and the audience isn't right, or you don't tell it right, or the camera screws up. I recorded it the first night I was there when I was exhausted at the Villages. It was about 5 minutes and 50 seconds. Nice, wholesome material. About my mom and my wife and the home renovations. Eddie Brill, who I'm working with, liked the video, so we submitted it to Fallon. So I guess now we just wait and see. So I was happy I got that done. What's amazing, it was such a relief to get that done that I don't think I did the material anymore on the rest of the tour. I think it's like, okay, I purged it. Because if I do get picked for Fallon, I'm going to have to be running around the city doing 5-6 minute spots to really hone it. But, you know, whatever. Why are you laughing?
Is it true?
Yeah. So I was happy with that. Also, I didn't know where to – originally I had the stuff earlier on in the set. And then I'm like, you know what? Let me do it later so they like me more. And it just worked better. It was give and take. Anyway, what else did I want to say about that? So have you guys ever been to the Villages in Florida?
No. I have no idea what that is. Sounds like a retirement community.
There's it's like a bunch of small villages together. It's seniors, predominantly white, right wing. Like I was learned about this. Oh yeah, have you ever heard of the Villages? I go, no, only when you're supporting Trump. I mean, you know, that's the only time I've seen the Villages. You know, only like Trump's coming to town, you guys are coming out. Apparently, and as you're right, Pip, it's predominantly senior citizens. Apparently, the Villages has the most STDs out of any city in America.
I've heard this about senior communities. Yeah. They're wild.
They do but bang.
I guess they figure, you know what? We can't get pregnant, so let's just raw dog. We've been waiting our whole life for this.
Yeah. Really?
Who cares about an STD when you're 86?
But they're not all 80. Some of them are in their 60s. I mean, you know, listen, you know, these STDs can make you go blind. They can cause brain damage. They can itch.
Blind, brain damage. What? Come on. Are they going to Harry Palms too? Come on. They'll be fine. Get them some antibiotics. They'll be back banging.
Doesn't syphilis cause like brain damage and shit?
If it's left untreated for a long time. Yeah.
All right, well, I mean, if they're not wrapping it, what makes you think they're going to run to the doctor to cure it?
Oh, old people love going to the doctor.
Right. Once you get Medicare, you go to the doctor all the time.
Okay. All right. Well, I didn't know this about them while I was there. Because if so, I would have made sure I packed my hand sanitizer and was washing accordingly. Like in the throes of COVID, I would have masked up.
There's more chlamydia in the senior communities than there is in the koala community.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Koalas are nasty little bears. I forgot about that.
Yeah, koalas are covered in chlamydia. Nasty little things.
Okay. I guess, well, what are you going to do when you're just hanging on a tree all day? And what do they eat? They don't eat bamboo. What do they eat? Eucalyptus leaves.
Eucalyptus, yeah.
All right. So after the first show, I meet a beautiful black woman and her 18-year-old daughter. Her daughter, these were extremely impressive, two impressive young women. Her daughter was born in the Netherlands and could speak four languages. Four languages. Most 18-year-olds can't even speak English. They just grunt at you.
True.
So she's getting ready to go to college for animation. The mother was a doctor who went to South Korea to lead a research study on a cancer drug that worked. This is an impressive human being.
Wow, yeah.
Wow.
And by the way, I'm selling these two short. Their conversation was much more impressive, and they liked my stupid act. But I'm very impressed with her. Her husband is back in L.A., former Navy SEAL. Then he went into the LAPD, and he was like somebody who deactivated bombs. And now he's in LA. He's still in LA waiting to get surgery for all the numerous injuries he occurred while deactivating bombs. And he's 59 years old. There's no way she's in her 50s, by the way. There's no way this woman was probably in her 40s. I don't know. Maybe. But
crack. You don't know.
You said it, not me.
Yeah.
Fair enough. But these three human beings, extremely impressive. It's nice when you can meet impressive people, and they actually like what the hell you do. But like to just like meet, because I'll be honest with you, there'll be stories where some of the people I bring up not nearly as impressive. So,
surely, yeah.
So I want to paint this nice picture of the two young ladies I met and the husband who I did not meet, but I'm sure is wonderful too. I mean, you're married to this woman, you got a kid like this, and you're a former Navy SEAL, and you deactivate bombs. You're probably pretty impressive.
I felt accomplished because I broke down some cardboard boxes in time for the recycling this week.
I would tell you. I would, in my eyes, you are impressive because I don't think I've ever successfully broken down a box in my life. I feel like
people
I just put
have called him. People have called him a broken down box. So.
Wow!
Hey, that's what they used to call me in high school. Oh,
that was.
I wasn't supposed to tell that story. Yeah, sorry.
Wow, Kevin just taking shots. It's all right. I'm just gonna let it
Did
slide.
They say had instead of not were.
Yes. God.
There you go.
Were you there? One night or another.
I'll never tell.
Yeah.
I'll never remember.
get a Zoom room, you two.
I do remember.
No. Stop. She wouldn't remember. The only reason Ashley remembers is because she has a souvenir. Settle down. So on the second show, pretty early in my act, very early in my act, I do some Andrew Cuomo jokes and maybe a Trump joke or two. And a guy shouts out to do Biden jokes. I'm not doing comedy karaoke, but it's just a weird thing. I'm like, relax, I'll get to everybody. Like, nobody's ever shouted out for a Biden joke ever. Nobody shouts out for Joe Biden ever. You know, unless it's, you know, F Joe Biden, you know, F you Joe Biden, which I don't understand. I understand you're upset your guy is not in office and whatever fakakta nonsense you believe. But as far as Joe Biden, how he elicits passion on by either side is beyond me.
Joe Biden is like the What's it, sherbet? You eat right after the meal to clean your palate.
Oh, lemon flavored sherbet. I was going to say lightly brown toast with margarine. That's what I was going to say.
That's exactly what we wanted. We wanted somebody who was boring,
yes,
and predictable and quiet.
Yes.
And we weren't going to have to read something crazy about it. That's exactly who we got.
And I love it.
We got the vanilla pudding that we wanted.
I used to call him, I said, I would say, before the election, I said, America wants a warm sitz bath. And that's what we got.
It's true. My tushy feels so much better and calmer.
Now, this show consists this evening of three people who are not impressed with Donald Trump. But, I mean, listen, his approval ratings are not good. But if you look at what he's done, I think he's going to be just fine. I don't want to get into all politics. But if this guy wanted to run again and he just ran on, like, accomplishments, the stuff that presidents have been trying to do from both parties for decades, he could probably do it. Now, he'd have a hard time enunciating it because he speak not so much. Well, but
His
numbers are going up.
What'd you say, Kevin?
His polling numbers are going up.
Yeah.
And I mean, just the last month alone, he's gotten more done than he did in the rest of his time in office so far. So, look, you know, I mean, the midterm elections will bear out a lot.
Well, I don't want to get into all politics thing, but I'll tell you what, it was a slam dunk for the Republicans to gain both chambers and, like, hold on, hold my fetus, let me screw this up, and they certainly have.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I thank them. But all right, on to this. So anyway, I did not plan this tour well. I was driving all over the place on this tour. Usually I really map things out where the hell I'm going. Not this time. I'm crisscrossing the state. I'm all over 6-7 hours a day. This is not wise. This is not wise at all. So Saturday, I went from Sarasota, which is southwest Florida, to Fort Walton Beach. Fort Walton is about 6 to 7 hours away in the panhandle. Now, this place, the owner is very nice. He puts us in a hotel on the beach, had food catered for our green room. Kevin, when does that happen?
Wow, that is high class.
Yeah.
Wow.
When does this happen, Kevin? We could drink as much and anything we want. It's like 1988. It's crazy.
Wow.
For the record, my cocktail of choice was Diet Coke.
Completely. He loves you. Yeah.
The staff said they're going to get me drunk. They sent me a shot during my set, and immediately I had trouble talking for a few seconds. It was the damnedest thing. It was like a cocaine hit or something. Like my tongue was fat. I'm like, what the hell's going on? I'm like,
it was snake venom.
I don't know. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a problem. But I powered through that, and then they sent me another shot, and I was fine. And so I don't know what it was. These were powerful drinks, powerful shots.
The antidote.
Maybe, but it was kind of nerve wracking. but it the show was good. It was probably one of the worst shows It might have been the worst show I had this year.
Why do you suppose?
It was a good show and Kevin will attest this. Kevin's been doing this long enough. Where if you work at it like Kevin does, even your bad shows aren't usually that bad. They're just not where you want them to be. I guess, listen, I can't remember the last time I ate my dick for 45 minutes where I got nothing. Now that I said that, I'm sure it's coming my way. But, I mean, at this point, usually we have enough moves where you can kind of meander through it, get through and go, ugh. But it wasn't terrible. Am I right?
Yeah, no, you have enough time under your belt, you can start to interpret where the audience is going and adjust accordingly.
Which is what I did.
It's not easy, but it's a skill.
I really had, material that usually does really well, titter-titter, kind of laying there. I'm like, really? This is the good stuff, people. Everybody likes this shit. So I really had to go into the crowd work. I don't mind doing crowd work, but I don't want to have to rely on crowd work. But to really get the laughs that I needed to get, I had to do crowd work. And I got some really big laughs with crowd work, but I was just kind of disappointed. But the feature felt like this was his worst show of the year, too, and that he had a need to go into crowd work, and he was fine, and the show was fine. But when I have, and I've said this before, when you have an owner that treats you this well, you really want to knock it out of the park for him. And I was just like, eh, that's not the show. That's not the show I wanted to have.
I wonder why that is. Do you suppose that it's the demographic of the crowd, or was it like
crowd was mixed?
Weird about the night?
No, crowd was mixed. They seemed perfectly normal. You know, I don't know the history of the room. Just wasn't happening. Again, the show was good. It was fine. I'm just looking for better than good and fine. When I hit like I don't. I've talked about this before. I'm not one of these people. Oh, I killed that set. But in my mind, I expect to do exceedingly well. Those are my if I don't do that, I want to know why. So anyway, whatever.
Well, you'd hope any comic goal when they get on stage is to kill. I mean, if you're not getting on stage to kill every time, why bother? What are you doing?
Well, because
there's definitely nights, and we all have it, where you get on stage, you know, and it's like any job. You're just like, you know what? It's not there. And you sort of mail it in. And sometimes you pull it off and nobody notices. Sometimes you don't. But the goal should always be to do as well as possible. And then I'm going to get into my whole comedy rant again, which I'm going to avoid. So continue that.
Well, this owner was so nice that mailing it in was really not an option for me. You know what? If we've been treated like crap, the hotel was crap. Mailing it in might have crossed my mind, but I'm like, no, I got to roll up my sleeves and I got to ride this crowd work. And I did. I did some damn good crowd work, but not because, you know, I eased into it. No, because it was a necessity, because the material, at that point, they just weren't having the material. So here's the interesting thing about this owner. Former Secret Service came with the Clintons to the White House, from Arkansas to the White House. Interesting tidbits. This guy's point of view. Take it was all you know me. I'm lapping this up in the green room after the show because I want to know some things. According to him, Bill Clinton, real asshole.
Really?
Usually everybody says he's such a nice guy.
Well, according to him, he'll be like ranting and raving and like, why is this not right? Blah blah blah. Until the lights go on. According to him. And then when the camera comes on, and then it's Mr. Trump, according to him.
Interesting.
One man's opinion. Hillary.
Right, but
Hillary Clinton has a taste for the young women.
Really?
I'm just telling you what he told me. I'm just
spreading. You're just spreading fake news. Disinformation.
But he said, well, why do you think they never broke up? So, according to him, they got rid of a lot of people that work there and brought in a lot of young women. I don't know. This is him. I don't know if it's true or not. No idea if it's true or not. This is what this man's telling me. Why? I don't know his political affiliation. This is just what he tells. But he didn't say she was a bad person. He's like, you just knew how to deal with her. But
did he say that she was a nice person or a mean person?
Neither. Yeah. Like, you know, she wanted what she wanted, like, and, you know, there were some things that she would want that, according to him, that she couldn't have, and you just had to tell her, like, you know, I can't do that, more or less. That's his. Now, George...
Did this Secret Service agent have strange blonde flowy hair, an orange tan, and a giant gut?
No, he did not. He did not. George W. Bush, and I'm not really surprised by this, said was very nice. I kind of figured W. would be nice to everybody.
Everybody, yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Now, I asked him about what's going on with the documents and Donald Trump and everything. I said, you know, do you think this is a big deal? He wasn't part of the Secret Service at this point, but do you think this is a big deal? He's like, they all take documents. A lot of it winds up becoming part of their presidential library. And he said, listen, whatever conversation he's in is classified. So he was like, this isn't a big deal. Now, what we're finding out is a lot of these documents, like nuclear codes and lists of spies, is not the normal. But...
Well, I think in the situation, and not to belabor this too long, but I think part of the situation, and that people aren't reading into enough, is that they asked him repeatedly for this stuff. So they went to him, and he could, this all could have been resolved completely behind the scenes if they just gave it back. And then they kept saying, we don't have anything more. And they went in and they got stuff. And then they said, there's definitely more. And they said, no, there's no more. And then they went in and they got more. So it's not as much about do presidents do this all the time. It's about that they were asked and they lied and they kept lying, which is the whole brand
yes.
of this guy.
I just like how, like, within the classified stuff, there's apparently, like, magazines and clothing and everything. Like I posted this on Facebook. I feel like Donald Trump lost the nuclear codes because he put it in, like, a back pocket of his slacks and put it in the wash. Like, I feel like that.
Yeah.
Like, Pip, you helped me move. The first time when I moved from Garfield, before I moved in with Elise, you helped me move to Hackensack. You helped me clean up my abominable, whatever the word is, apartment, because I was, to be honest, I was a slob. I feel like Trump leaving the White House was kind of like that Garfield opponent. Apparently there's like dust bunnies. Like there's just papers like crumpled up. Do I need these papers? Do I not need these papers? Just throw it in a bag one day down the line. Maybe or maybe I won't sort it out. Like I feel like Donald Trump moved out of the White House the way I moved out of my apartment in Garfield.
Are you kidding? I'm holding the stick to beat off the dust bunnies around me just so I can get through the show. No judgment from me.
No, but I mean, listen, that apartment, because I did not have a woman's touch and I was a sloppy human being, it was dirty. It was. Listen, it wasn't infested with bugs,
it was cluttered. You hadn't dusted recently, but really, really, you make it sound much worse than it was.
But there was like papers, there was like bags of papers, and there'd be like some Halls mentholipus cough drop thrown in. Like you're just scrambling to get shit out, and like maybe there'll be like a bumper sticker and a Jerky Boy CD, and maybe there'll be my thesis for something. Like it's all thrown in together. It's like.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's how Donald Trump moved out of the way. He's like, oh, wow, this has happened. All right, everybody into the ShopRite garbage bags. Let's go.
like every bag or every box is an archaeological dig.
Yes.
It's strata. You can tell what time period it's from.
Like, I feel like if Donald Trump would go, listen, I'm sorry, I'm a hoarder. Everybody go, oh, okay. The hell is that? Is that your dog?
That's my dog. Sorry.
You have two dogs, right?
Oh.
Okay.
That's a hilarious sound.
By the way, dog's not a fan of me making fun of Donald Trump, just so you know. The dog just started howling at that.
You have some very conservative dogs, Kevin.
Two
I'm
big dogs.
Quite surprised.
Two big dogs.
All right. Now I'm going
Do
to...
they wear little red hats in the house? Why are they so upset about the Trump dog?
Now I'm going to tell you a long and sordid story about a comedy club that I play and don't play. And it really epitomizes what comedy can be like at my level. Maybe Kevin can empathize with what I'm about to say. So I went to the Laugh-In Comedy Cafe in Fort Myers. Kevin, have you ever been there?
No, okay. I've never been.
So I have so here's the long and weird history with this place. 15 years or so ago, I went there for an owner named Joe. My friend Ray brought me along to feature for him. Now, Ray and I used to flip-flop. Sometimes he'd feature, sometimes I'd feature. I always liked when Ray would open for me because it was very low-key, material-driven, you know, unlike me, who's not. I mean, I kind of, like, rely on material now, but whatever. So we always flip-flopped, always had a good time. So we I don't remember if there was a Thursday at the time, but I do recall the late Friday show. It was a small and a bit of an obnoxious crowd, as late Friday shows can be, at that period of time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I recall I did pretty well, and Ray, who's much quieter, did okay. It wasn't easy. The staff was complimentary about how we handled it. Next morning, Ray gets a call from the owner, Joe. He's not happy about how we did. Now, Joe was not at the show. Ray was getting bumped down to feature, and I was getting bumped down to host. Money wasn't changing, but this is what happened. It's very demoralizing, as you would imagine, to have this happen to you. Not the first time it happened to me in Florida, but still demoralizing nonetheless, and I felt a little bit unjustified. On Sunday, we went to a spring training game, and there was people at the show there, And they said how much they liked the show. And we're like, well, tell the owner. But as you would imagine, I'm out skis. I am out skis at the Laugh-In Comedy Cafe. When you get bumped down, you're not really calling back for more work. You're like, all right. Well, that was a one and done. Now, Ray had played there for years as a feature, and I think this was his first time headlining. Okay. So then I got into club. Then the club got sold to a man named Brian. I got recommended to him. I got in as a headliner. I don't know if I did it once or twice for him. I remember the last time we had a special Sunday show for a Jewish group. When I walked in, they said they don't want any political material. This is like 5 or 6 years ago when I was really doing like a lot of Trump stuff. Not like 20 minutes of Trump stuff. But there was like I had a good chunk of Trump stuff. And it was growing. And it was getting better and better. So I'm kind of like freaking. I'm like, well, why couldn't you tell me this before I walked into the club so I could have prepared? So I kind of freaked out. Did fine. Show was good. Every played by the parameters. Everything was good. Then Brian sold it to Jamie. Now, Jamie, I worked for Jamie for a few years at the Carolina Comedy Club in Myrtle Beach. I actually took Joe Curry with me. I think twice I actually took Joe with me there. One time for Jamie, one time not for Jamie. So Jamie's very conservative. I'm not. Kevin might actually remember him from a year or two ago on my page because he was always going off. And Kevin, you know, when politics was a thing. It's not so much a thing anymore for us, but it seemed to consume a lot of our times. But the three of us have moved on because we like the way shit's going. Which is often, I say, the difference between liberals or not liberal. Kevin's not a liberal, but which is often the difference between Trump followers and everybody else. You know? It's like he doesn't consume us, so we're good or bad, you know, we're happy, you know, it's fine, just not, right. But whatever. All right, neither here nor there. So so Jamie's conservative, but we always got along. So a friend requested me on Facebook. I accepted him. He was always argumentative. I wouldn't get into it with him. I just didn't. Then he unfriended me. I actually called him up. I'm like, what the hell was that about? You requested me, and then you unfriend me. He's like, oh. I just need to, less with the politics and everything. I'm thinking, you can scroll past. You don't have to engage. You know, you don't have to. I scroll past all the time. By the way,
you didn't have to whip out your fangs when you saw something you didn't like, you know.
Somebody who I don't know tagged me on a comment that I made 2 years ago about Donald Trump on somebody else's page that they like they wanted to re-engage with, like, a point about Biden or something. I'm like, are you serious? Who are you?
Another thing.
Yes.
2 years later.
You know, I've been thinking of. I've been ruminating on this, and I'll have you know. It's like I'm like, wow.
I finally have the answer that I wanted.
And it's weird because they will say to us, "You have Trump derangement syndrome or something," but it's like I'm not even focused on the dude anymore. And some people are still like, "Okay, whatever." Anyway, so I actually had taken Jamie with me on a one-nighter leading into Myrtle Beach, so I booked him. Anyway, he gives me a date in Fort Myers, the club of the Laugh-In. I end up losing my date, and I got bumped for Bobcat Goldthwait. Yeah. Nothing lets you know where you are on the comedy scale of things than getting bumped for Bobcat Goldthwait. No disrespect to Bobcat, but it's not exactly Kevin Hart or Chris Rock. So.
Ouch.
Yeah. So then I keep trying to call for the rebooking, and I can't get the date. And then Jamie tells me, oh, well, you know, we're bringing in acts with, like, bigger credits, which is a very often used blow off. And then you look at the calendar and go, well, that's a bunch of horse shit. Really? A festival in California is a bigger credit? Stop it. It's like, okay, he doesn't want to use me anymore. I tend to think it was politics. He would never admit that. I tend to think it was politics. So last year, I get booked to feature in Port Charlotte at the Comedy Zone. Jamie has now left Fort Myers. There was an ugly split with him and the other owners. The other owners wanted him out, but he's still booking Fort Myers. But he's now managing the club in Port Charlotte, and I'm there the first week he's there managing the club.
Oh, crap. Oh, boy. He doesn't know what to do now.
I'm thinking, you know what? We've always been good with each other, but is this going to be weird? I knew he was full of shit, but whatever. There's only so much confrontation you're going to do in this business. So I do the week. I think it was Wednesday through Saturday. I have really, really good shows in the feature spot. The owner likes me. The owner is very conservative and does not like political material. But apparently he went on his podcast and talked about how much he likes my political material at the time because I was making fun of all sides. So I do the week. At the end, I ask Jamie. I go, listen, man. I mean, he's seen me do really good. I'd like to get a date in Fort Myers now. I figure, why don't I ask? I have nothing to lose. So he gives me this Labor Day weekend, which is a bad weekend. It's a bad weekend to get, but I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm in the door. So that's how I got the date. But that's not the end of the story. That's not the end of the story. Fort Myers has a new owner again, Nabil. So now I have a history with Nabil. He owns a club in Palm Harbor, Florida. A few years ago, I went in again as a feature, had great shows, and he got a great report on me. He gives me a headline date for Palm Harbor, terrible money. And I'm bringing Joe with me. I'm going to bring Joe Curry with me. But it winds up getting canceled due to COVID-19, you know, for those few months when Florida was actually shut down.
Do you mean a week and a half?
No, I mean, they were shut down, but much more briefly than what we were dealing with.
Yes.
So I'm trying to get another date in Palm Harbor. Can never get that. I get him on the phone once in a while, text with him, can never get the date. I'm sure Kevin can relate to this on some level as well.
Oh, yeah.
So Nabil is honoring the dates that Jamie booked, which is fairly rare and a pretty cool thing to do, to be fair about it. So that's,
yeah.
So I'm like, all right. So then, like, a couple months ago, I'm trying to get this off promise but never delivered Palm Harbor date. And he's like, okay, call me on blah, blah date. So I call him on blah, blah date. I actually get him on the phone, and this is after many, many phone calls. I actually get him on the phone. He's about to give me the date. He's like, oh, hold on, because he just bought this club. I got to take another call. So I don't get that. Like, he mentioned the date, but I don't get the confirmation of the date. So now I'm trying to get this date. I'm like, all right, I text him back later because he says he's going to call me back. He doesn't call me back. I go, listen, if that date's still open, I'll do that date. No, that date's gone. Of course it is. Of course it is. So I'm like, fine. So now I'm like, text him. I'm like, you know, trying to get a date. He's called this. Finally, he says, he's like, I can't do this anymore. He's like, no more. I'm like, okay, fine. And with comedy, there's that weird level of persistence and not trying hard enough. And you don't want to be a pain in the ass, but if you're not a pain in the ass, they completely forget about you. It's this whole weird thing. And it's just...
It's like dating.
It's like job interviews.
I can't relate to any of that. I can only...
It's like both.
It is terrible. It is terrible. So, I'm there Thursday night. He walks in. I've never met him. Even when I did the other club, I never met him. He's very nice. But we don't have like a rapport. Hey, how are you? Ba-ba-ba. So Thursday, 13 people. And we'll get to that show in a minute. 13 people. And now listen, I think you guys will test. Nobody does 13 people like I do 13 people. I mean, you give me a...
You have a way with a baker's dozen.
You give me a show that's sparsely attended, and I'll give you gold. Which is not really a calling card, but it is certainly a skill. So then I do really well. We have the show Friday, and I'm talking, and that goes well, and I'm talking to the manager, and I'm like, you know, I want to come back. He's like, I don't know. He's like, I got to be honest, Nabil makes that decision. I gave him a good report on you. He's like, but we're cutting the money. The money, like what you're getting is way more than we normally pay. And I wasn't getting great money, kids. Jamie booked me on a low amount. I mean, it was okay, but it wasn't anything to say. And we're getting rid of hotels. This is what he's telling me it might not happen. But I go, well, Kevin Lee, and Kevin's a friend of the show, been on the show. I go, Kevin Lee's not coming down for that. It's like, well, no, there's some people. Right. There's always some people.
Wow.
So I kick ass Friday, kick ass on two shows Saturday. I'm not just lying. I had really good shows, and we'll get a little bit more into the shows in a second. So, same thing with the manager, same type of thing. Like, okay. It's kind of like you'd think after like these shows, yeah, man, we'll have you back. That's what normally happens. Can't wait to have you back. All right, fine. Whatever. So I drive the 20 hours back on Sunday. I text Nabil, hey, thank you for the week. Love to, you know, love to be able to do it. Maybe the two clubs back to back next year. So he texts me back. He goes, thank you. Yeah, 2023 is already booked. I'm like, what? 20?
What? A whole year.
Well, he said except for a few weeks that he's leaving open to move things around. So I said, okay, when will you be doing 2024? And he's like, let's not start that again. Okay.
What's his deal?
So it goes back to what I said just a while ago, that it's very disheartening that no matter what you do on that stage, sometimes it doesn't matter. I'll probably reach out to him at some point next year, but I'm kind of already writing that one off, that he had decided, because I was being persistent, because he couldn't give me the date that he had promised me, that I wasn't coming back, that I was a problem.
That's nuts. It's just, sometimes it's just all so subjective you want to scream.
Well, we've talked about this a lot. It comes down to one person's opinion.
Yeah.
This one happens to
and
be
they're
the
usually the worst person alive.
I can't even say this guy's a bad guy. I can't even say that. He's not a bad guy at all. It just seems like I'm out again. So it's very interesting, this club. I've gone through all these owners and I'm in and then I'm out. And it's not everything, you know, with the exception of the first time, and even then I did okay, it's never something I did. It's just all this other shit, which is why I get driven so crazy. Now, briefly on to the weirdos. I guess I won't have time to do the restaurants this week. Well, I won't do the restaurants this week, so I'll just briefly on to the Florida weirdos, then we'll take our break. We'll have to talk about the restaurants and the fast food situation and all the nonsense I encountered next week, because I just don't see the time for it. So the show on Thursday, as I said, we had 13 people. In that group was an 82-year-old man on a date with his neighbor. She was younger. How much younger? I don't know. They were very participatory. They're asking me questions during the show, like, you know, when there's 13 people, what's the smallest amount of people you ever performed in front of? You know, I told them zero, and that's a true story. I've performed in front of zero people.
Oh, my God.
And I'm answering them, and they're having a good time. After my set, the MC goes up and asks the woman if there will be a second date. Why he asked that, I don't know. But he asks the woman if there will be a second date, and she loudly says no.
Oh, God. Oof.
There's the comic boy. So I'm standing in the back of the room with my merch, keeping it company because nobody else is. And and he comes by, and he's like, I don't like your nasty Jew jokes. If anything, my Jew jokes are very cutesy. They're probably some of the cutesiest nonsense I have in my act, the vast majority of my Jew jokes. I don't really have nasty Jew jokes. I have some nasty material. I have some cold-hearted material. But nasty Jew jokes, you guys have seen me. Do I have nasty Jew jokes?
Not that I recall.
Kevin?
Not that pops my mind.
Yeah. So, and again, you know, I don't, and I've talked about this with Pip and Joe, and I'll ask you, Kevin, you see me enough. What portion of my performance on any given night would give off the impression that I give a shit what people think? I mean, listen, of course I care, but I'm not, on some level I care. But, you know, I'm not going to be one of these kowtowing, you know, comics. And he's like, well, I didn't like that. I go, and by the way, he was laughing his ass off the whole night. I catered to this guy. You know, I didn't like that. I go, that's okay. I didn't like that. I go, well, we're not taking a poll. I go, you'll be okay. You'll get through it. He's like, well, you know, I never met a nasty Jew before. I go, well, now you have.
So he was saying, you were the nasty Jew, not necessarily the joke.
No, first the nasty Jew jokes, but then I think he was like getting offended on behalf of Jews.
Like the Jews were good people.
Was he a Jewish person?
I really was not that interested. I don't know. It's a fair question. It's a fair question. And really what I should have done, I should have said, wait a minute. You laughed your butt off for 50 minutes the whole time, and you want to come up to me and complain about what you didn't like. Do you go to, if you had met a director of a movie that you liked, would you go to the director about the one scene you don't like? Like, who does this? The theory is this guy was probably trying to bow up in front of this woman to try to save some face after she, like, just shot him down.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe he was trying to show off and say, you know, oh, look, watch me and my big opinion.
Yeah. I don't know. It did not go well for him. It did not. As you, like, Kevin, when somebody has a complaint about your show, I'm sure it happens on the odd occasion. Has it happened that people come up to you complaining?
I don't think anybody's ever complained to me directly about my show now. But you push the boundaries a little bit. I'm not a boundary pusher with my material.
What boundaries am I pushing? I think it's a perfectly acceptable show.
Dude. You don't push boundaries. Please.
I don't know. Maybe, you know what? Maybe that's my problem. I guess. I don't look at it that way. I just look at talking about stuff that interests me. But certainly with the Jew stuff, I'm not pushing any boundaries.
I didn't think so. I have to see your most recent material then, and I'll pay attention to that.
I have written new material. I have not written really a lot of new Jew material. The Jew material is pretty much the Jew material at this point. You know, like, you never see a Jew. I saw a group of Jewish bikers. They're just like regular bikers, except they can't ride hogs. I mean, this is really some boundary-breaking material here.
Nasty.
No.
Funny.
No, Jewish ninjas like Chinese ninjas, except you can hear them coming, oi, they. I mean, come on, stop. Like, as far as the bullshit I speak on stage, the Jew stuff is some of the kindest shit I have, to be fair.
I can't imagine that you're doing stuff that's nasty about Jews. No. I've never heard you go that way. So I don't know. It's really interesting what people will find to be offended by. It's so odd.
The nastiest joke, the meanest joke I have in my acting, actually, Kevin was in the car with me when I was working this bit out. We were on tour in Michigan. It was the Be Brave bit, and I was coming up with all these examples. Do you remember this, Kevin?
That came out of a conversation we were having.
Okay. So the nasty, and I've talked about this before, the one joke I feel bad about in the set is, Be Brave is holding the piss cup for Michael J. Fox. That's a mean fucking joke.
I didn't hear what you said properly. What?
Brave is holding the piss cup, the cup for Michael J. Fox to take his piss test. That's a terrible joke. It's terrible.
You are going to hell now.
Yeah.
That was the line.
I did not endorse that joke.
No. I don't even endorse that joke. If somebody came up to me about that joke, that's the one joke I go, yeah, I'm not really proud of that either. I mean,
yeah.
All right. So Friday news. What the hell? What was that?
Sorry, I hit my phone and it hit the keys.
Must have been one of the dogs again. Anyway, Friday, a group of eight women come to the show. One attractive one in the group. Not good numbers.
Ouch.
Not good numbers. So they're noisy, and people are complaining they're being loud. And I'm in the back of the room, and the manager asks them if they can be a bit more quiet. After the feature's done, they leave. I ask them where they're going. Like, we were told we had to be quiet, so we're going. And then they're screaming out in the parking lot. Like it's unreasonable to be asked to be quiet at a comedy show that is not a private event where people have paid money to see the show.
You loudmouth bitches. They're just so full of themselves. And, oh, it's all about us, and we want to have a good time. So our good time has to impede your good time. Oh, shut up.
That's exactly what it was. So then I will bring you to the last show of the tour, and then we will take a break. So last show of the tour, we have the biggest crowd we've had in Fort Myers. I'm having a very good set.
Materials working, crowd work is working. There are some couples in the front I'm talking. Towards the end of the set, one of the men from one of the couples in the front gets up to go to the bathroom. You know, this is always a weird thing. Do you comment when people go to the bathroom? Do you not comment? It's always a struggle. It's the same thing like when you see like somebody's not enjoying the show when everybody else is. Do you say something? Do you not say something? It's always like that internal struggle because I just need to be loved and I need your undying attention and affection.
Even you, the one with the puss on.
Yes, yes. So I tell him, like, well, where are you going, dude? The show's almost over. He's like, oh, I got to pay. I'm like, well, can't you pinch it? Can't you hold it? We're almost done over here. I mean, really, we're in the home stretch. So he goes to the bathroom. Okay. So I'm talking to his wife during the show. I don't remember what the hell I was saying. I don't think it was anything groundbreaking or particularly nasty or anything like that. And he comes storming out of the bathroom, back of the room. He's like, I purposely didn't want to disrupt your show. And without missing a beat, I go, well, you are now. Because my brain sometimes is like instantaneous. Instead of like just, what the hell is going on over here? You know, giving this all a moment. And also there is the expectation, because you're the one with the microphone, you're the captain of this Titanic, that you are going to steer us away from the iceberg. There is that expectation, although I don't know if I always do that.
So, steer him right back in.
I do that. I do that sometimes. So I'm like, mm-hmm. like,
I've seen it.
Yeah. So I might be part of the problem. So then he's like, oh, you're talking to my wife. I'm like, well, she's in the front row and part of a comedy show. Like this is some property type shit going on here.
Yeah.
So then the guy storms out and he starts beating his chest. I'm showing you on the video. One hand against his chest, walking out, beating his chest. I don't know if he needs to jumpstart his heart. I don't know if that's how he soothes himself, like my cat Nacho licks himself so he doesn't bite us. I don't know what's going on over here. But he is storming out and he is beating his chest and he's out in the parking lot. I now turn my attention to the woman. I go, are you okay? She's like, I'm fine. I'm serious. Should we call you a cab or something? Because this is not healthy behavior.
He's like one step away from gorillas in the mist. You know? I am dominant!
Just like that. So then the show, again, this has been an excellent show. He was participating a few minutes earlier. Maybe he was drinking. Maybe I should have sensed it, but I couldn't know. I'd seen him hit his chest a couple of other times. I didn't know what that was. It certainly wasn't the drum beat to war, but I didn't know. I didn't know what that was. So then
it was.
it might have been, but he was laughing at times, you know, and that's the danger of talking to an audience. You never know. But then again, my material triggers people. So really, the way I should do my act is being a mime. That's what I should do. You know, I should just do this shit and I'll be fine. I'll get the same amount of rebookings. So then the show is over. There's some stragglers talking to me, you know, buying some merch. The guy comes back. Guy comes back in. You would think they would have left. I don't know where the woman is. I just wanted to see your face. Okay, dude. And then he storms out.
There it is.
Yeah. It's like...
You saw it for an hour. Did you think it was going to change?
And this is why I say I can visit Florida, but I could never live in Florida. Because in Florida, there's always that element of, I've just taken some bath salts and I might eat off your face. There's always that underlying element in Florida.
Florida, go to Florida.
Yeah, I mean, this is unusual behavior, what I've described, is it not?
Very, very, and scary as hell. That he marched back in. I just want to see your face.
I mean, Kevin, do you ever encounter shit like this, or is it just me?
I don't think I've ever encountered. No, I don't think I've ever had too much shit after a show, or shit from an audience member. You know, I guess sometimes I'll get the asshole who's trying to contribute to the show afterwards come up to me and be like, you know, I was just trying to help you out, and that kind of nonsense. But that's all.
You don't
standard fare.
You don't get the aggression
that I'm talking about.
No, you seem to elicit a special emotion in people, Davin, and I think you should feel good about that.
Well, that's the question. Wait a minute. That might not be wrong. I mean, aren't we trying to create emotional reactions?
Yeah. If that's how you get through the day, yep.
Is that how I get through? All right. So what, Kevin, do you think I am doing to elicit that reaction?
You're performing in Florida. That's what I think.
So we're going to say it's a location issue.
It's a Florida issue.
It's just really weird, and it reminds me again, like, we really have no protection in these clubs.
Yeah.
None.
So.
Yeah, it's just you against the world. Very scary.
I did a show at a casino a few months ago, and I posted about this. I think you might even comment to them. And after the show, after my set, the next comic was on, and you know when you're sitting, you can just feel somebody in your perimeter?
Yes.
Feel like you can't see them, but you just know there's somebody there?
Yes.
And I turn around, there's this guy standing there who was this pretty big guy, and he was obviously hammered. And he looks at me and he goes, you know, I respect what you do up there, and I know it's hard, but you were making fun of Christians, so I had to say something. And I was like, I didn't even know you were at the show. Like, this wasn't a guy that I saw in the audience or anything, and I was like, oh, okay. And so then I felt that he was like, he had the advantage on me because he was standing up, so I stood up. And then he gets in real close to me and he goes, you know, you Jews think you can say whatever you want. And so I just had to make my point. And I was like, what? And he's like, just remember, Chris Rock showed, Will Smith showed that you can't say whatever you want. And then he just like walked away. And I was like, It took me a minute to, like, internalize everything that just happened. And then I was like, wow, that was really fucked up. Like, that was a really fucked up situation that I didn't even appreciate at the time that it was happening.
Well, I think what you just realized, you can put that in the same type of category as the stuff I just described. It's aggression. That was definitely aggression that was being displayed towards you. He was trying to intimidate you,
yeah.
And it was craziness, and it had to do with your skit, with your little ha-has. That's the shit I'm talking about.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
That was a threat.
Yeah.
And Kevin does not have a threatening persona on stage.
No,
and especially the jokes I tell about Christians, which is mostly about Christmas, are the least offensive jokes possible. And most of them are actually making fun of the Jewish. It's making fun of how bad the Jewish religious holidays are. He was just hammered, and he heard somebody say something about Christians or Christmas, and he was like, nah, I need. But I didn't know he was in the show. I didn't know he said anything. The whole thing was just very strange. But to Davin's point, there was nobody standing there who was like, hey, buddy, get away from him.
No. It's special. All right. We'll have to do the fast food situation next week because we got to talk about immature abortions. Immature abortions, cotton picking, Nazis, boozy desserts, much to cover. So before we do that, we're going to play